Welcome to your weekly English radio magazine on CJMQ 88.9 FM in Sherbrooke and CIDI 99.1 FM in the Lake Brome area. It's the Friday Drive, news commentary, 30-30 sports, arts and culture, and the interview of the week. Local events and issues for townshippers from townshippers. The Friday Drive starts right now with your host, Daniel Coulomb. 30-30 Sports on the Friday Drive.
First day of summer. Eeny, meeny, chilly, beanie. The spirits are about to speak. Hello, John Edwards.
Hello, Daniel Coulomb. How are you?
I'm just fine. And you?
Oh, good. No complaints on this end.
So did you stay up late last night and watch the NBA?
Oh, I did. I loved every second of it.
It's now tied 3-3. The final game is in OKC. What do you see happening?
Well, I would very much like to see the Pacers winning, OKC losing, and OKC losing by another 20 would make me very happy as well. So that's what I'm hoping for, and the Pacers have already won in Oklahoma City, and if the Pacers hadn't let Game 4 slip away, this series should be over, really. So, you know, had a bit of a slow start, but they came out strong after that, and I think they take it down in Oklahoma City on Sunday.
Feels like a home court series so far anyway. You know what was pretty cool? I was watching RDS this morning. They had interviews, mostly in French, with players. Pascal Siakam speaks French very well, and of course, the Montreal connection.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's sort of a reminder of how global a game the NBA is, because Siakam is from Cameroon. So, yeah, obviously he speaks French. And we've got the two Montrealers, which is something that would have been unheard of in an NBA final 10 years ago. You know, you've got four Canadians in the series. You know, it's a reminder of how basketball has grown in this country and, you know, how global the NBA is now.
Still with the NBA, the Lakers sell majority interest for $10 billion this week. Seems to me millionaires are not even in the game anymore. They have consortiums now that get together and pay these outrageous prices.
Yeah, sport franchise valuations have been bonkers for a long, long time. And this is no exception. And the eye-popping thing about this is a valuation you've usually seen in the multi-billions being for NFL teams, which are basically money spinners because they make an instant profit before they even open the gates. So their valuations are through the roof. And for the Lakers, we're seeing a $10 billion valuation. That's interesting that the Clippers, who used to play in the same building and, you know, play 10 miles down the road, I think they sold to Steve Ballmer for about two. It's a reflection of the fact that the Lakers are one of the teams in the NBA that's sort of a global brand that you could market anywhere in the world and people know who the Lakers are. And there's sort of only probably three teams in the NBA, the Lakers, the Celtics, and the Bulls, that you could do that with.
Another reminder of how big time sports is not coming back to Quebec anytime soon, i.e. the Expos or the Nordiques.
Well, unless someone in this province, or it would be a company in this province, has a lot of money to throw around, and the NHL has already said it doesn't really want to deal with PKP, so that rules out Quebec for a while. For the Expos, it's going to be a Bell or a Videotron or someone like that. It would be a corporate thing, not a... I don't know if there's anyone in this province rich enough to do that on their own.
I would totally concur on that. All right, John Edwards, we speak again at 5:30.
Yep, we'll see you then.
Of course there's music, but we also talk about a lot of issues that matter to you. You're listening to The Friday Drive on CJMQ 88.9 FM and CIDI 99.1 FM.
Russia.
The Weekly News Review with longtime Townships journalist Mike McDevitt on the Friday Drive.
News Review again this week. Michael McDevitt, not available. Just for everyone's information, Mike is back in hospital this week with continued health issues. He checks his Facebook page often. So you have time to send him a message and say hi. I know that would be much appreciated on his part. Here this week, once again, Townships-based economic development expert Michel Ratier. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, Daniel. I'm good. Prompt rétablissement, that they say up in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, his spirits are good. In spite of everything going on, hopefully his summer will be much better than what he's been going through these past few weeks.
Wonderful, wonderful.
All right, many things to talk about. Let's start with Mr. Trump going home during the G7 summit, Michel, with the Donald at the center of controversy, skipping town early. Were the VIPs relieved when he left?
Oh, yeah, Daniel. If we just comment quickly on his leaving, everyone breathed a sigh of relief and participated after that in frank discussions on many subjects without continuously having to bite their tongue for fear that the baby king would throw a tantrum again.
Mm.
As you mentioned, he did throw a monkey wrench in the smooth arrival of all the other leaders by praising Putin, of all people, as he set foot in Kananaskis.
Putin is a war criminal. He's bombing civilians in Ukraine again this week in Kyiv. And according to Mr. Trump, he's a nice guy.
My God. And he blamed Obama and Trudeau for having wrecked the G8. And Trudeau wasn't even there when the G8 went back to the G7. Let me just backtrack here. The G7 was created 50 years ago, and this was like just a gathering of leaders that would be talking between themselves. It started in 73 in France. It's in 75 that it became the G6 under Giscard d'Estaing. Justin had invited Justin's father, Pierre Trudeau, as an observer. In 76, it's because of Gerald Ford, President of the United States, that Canada was invited as a permanent member of the organization that then became G7. And because of Gerald Ford's insistence, that's why Canada is now part of the G7. And Gerald Ford wanted to have a strong ally with him when he had to be confronted or faced with allied leaders from Europe. So he wanted a better balance. That's why Canada joined the organization. Russia, Boris Yeltsin, if you remember this guy, was an observer from 1991 to 1994. And the G8 formally became the G8 in 2001 and was represented by Putin. In 2014, when Putin invaded Ukraine, Prime Minister Harper and President Barack Obama canceled going to the Sochi summit, and no one else went. They held the summit in Brussels, and it became the G7 again. Trump doesn't like these multilateral meetings, Daniel. He usually grabs all the attention in the air and sucks all the air out of the room. He's not used to having someone talk after him. He doesn't have control over the agenda and the proceedings. He doesn't like sleeping outside of Mar-a-Lago. His food habits are disturbed. And he has a huge bug phobia. Can you imagine with the grizzlies that in Kananaskis? In my view, he already had in mind to leave early, make a quick getaway as soon as the excuse could be crafted. He didn't intend to stay the whole 2 days. He didn't want to have all the leaders wanting one-on-one meetings with him. And he certainly did not want to attend the Tuesday morning session, which was with Zelensky. It focused on Ukraine. He did not want to discuss that. And he just got out of there as soon as he could.
Yeah, well, he said he wanted to deal with the Iran and Israel war. Isn't that more like helping Israel?
Exactly. And that's exactly what the Americans are doing right now by threatening Iran with the exact same words that Netanyahu is using.
In the meantime, Michel, the focus is off Ukraine, off Gaza, where hundreds of thousands continue to starve.
Yeah, terrible.
It wouldn't be a full week without a tariff tangle. The U.S. and Canada are deep in trade wars again, with billions in exports and jobs hanging in the balance. Where do we stand now?
We still have 50% on steel and aluminum and all their related finished, semi-finished and derivative goods and products. Softwood lumber is still at 14.5%. It was 14.5% last year. It may reach 34% in August, by the way. And on passenger vehicles and parts, tariffs are 25% on all non-origin components that go into vehicles, meaning original components, meaning they come from Canada and Mexico, but non-origin components, that means that we need to export these components from elsewhere. In a typical vehicle, that's already a quarter of all the components that go in a car are origin. So there's a 25% on top of that. If you tab all the tariffs, they apply right now to over $53 billion in Canadian exports to the United States. But worse than that is they threaten 500,000 Canadian jobs right now. But I'd like to put the rest that people are saying, but we're doing nothing. No, we do have retaliating tariffs on approximately $44 billion worth of what we import. So that $44 billion is paid by Canadians, by the way, Canadian companies and Canadian consumers. All of this will last approximately another 30 days, bringing us to the middle of July. And this was an agreement that came out of Kananaskis when Prime Minister Carney met with President Trump. It was kind of imposed by us, by the way, because the Americans have been pussyfooting all the proposals that have been coming out of Ottawa towards Washington. So they decided to give themselves a 30-day period to come to an agreement. And we'll see what happens when we get to that end of that period. But Prime Minister Carney was quoted in saying that we're not going to agree to just anything in this process. It didn't stop Trump from declaring when he took the plane home from Kananaskis to Mar-a-Lago that Canada will still be paying more on tariffs. And by the way, the price tag to receive his protection under the Golden Dome went from $62 billion to $71 billion in just a few days, and nobody knows why.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for the tariffs this week.
Fast inflation. I really enjoyed the part this week where Trump said, well, Mr. Carney wants to negotiate something that's really complicated, so I'm not sure we can get it done.
Yes. Mr. Carney was asked, what is so complex about your proposal? Then he was a little stumped. He was not going to say because the guy's too dumb to understand what we're trying to do.
Michel, worrying numbers this week for Quebec's universities and their economy. A sharp drop in international student applications tied to new immigration rules. How bad could it get?
This is terrible, Daniel. Since 2020, both levels of government have changed the immigration rules for student visas 10 times already. And this is creating havoc for all the students that would like to come to study in our Quebec universities. A study came out this week, published by a consulting firm, Volume 10. And it was interestingly sponsored by 10 renowned Quebec foundations. And I'm talking about here Fondation Alain Bouchard, the Foundation for La Famille Trottier, the Jarolowsky Foundation, the Molson Foundation. What this analysis produced was that international students, as of last year, represent about 17% for all students in our universities in Quebec. So that's about 52,000 to 57,000 students. They spend yearly over $4 billion. They inject $4 billion in our economy, and their total footprint in our economy is closer to, with the cascading and ripple effect, closer to $5 billion. 30% of them, at the end of their studies, apply to stay in Quebec and Canada. Over 87% find employment right after their graduation. The Quebec government announced a few weeks ago, I guess, already, that it was going to put a cap on international student visas here for Quebec, a cap at 125,000 students. Now, this is having a bad effect because the message here made it that applications now are down in all our universities by 46%, which means that we may, from an economic standpoint, look at a loss of $2 billion of spending from these students and a potential loss of 27,000 jobs just because of government nearsightedness. We're also missing out on another great opportunity because of isolationism. racism and anti-immigration policies in the United States, we could jump on an opportunity to recruit future bright minds, but we're not.
I agree with you. It would be a perfect way to attract new potential students to our universities here. The Quebec Liberals have a new leader. Two rounds for Pablo Rodriguez to get the crown, Michel.
I think he squeaked over 52% against 47% or something like that for Charles Milliard. The Liberals gave themselves different rules for nominating their leader this time around. Voting was skewed young people, but still Pablo Rodriguez did make it through with 52%. This is a guy who comes from Sherbrooke, by the way, right? The spirits are up on the Liberal Party side with regards to Pablo making it eventually through the next election. Next year. We have to remember the Liberal Party has not had a leader for the last 3 years now, and there's a lot of legwork and field work that needs to be done if they're going to rebuild it. And guess what? Pablo Rodriguez was an organizer for the Federal Liberal Party for years before he was elected. He was a minister as well as the main leader for the PLC in Quebec. So he's the man for the job. Let's see if it's going to work.
You are the man for the job here, as Mike McDevitt is unavailable. Townships-based economic development expert Michel Ratti, have a good summer, and thank you again so much for doing this.
Yes, good summer to you, Daniel. Take care.
If you have any comments or questions regarding what you hear on today's show, email us at cjmqnews@yahoo.ca.
Fantasize about the car I drive. Don't need the light on. I can find my way. It's been so long now, I have to say.
time for your weekly information from the Lake Brome, Missisquoi area on the Friday Drive.
Taylor McClure right now reporting from the Brome, Missisquoi region with stories for you from this week. Taylor, how are you?
Hi, Daniel. Feeling a little bit better than last week. Hope everything's going good on your end, too.
Very well. Just to remind everyone, poor Taylor had a tooth extraction last week. Never a fun time. So at least you're back on track, sort of?
Yeah, I'm back on track. Still healing a little bit, but I know I'll get there eventually. Definitely feeling a lot better.
You'll make it, Slugger, for sure. All right, let's talk about a couple of things. Let's start with La Maison Gilcal, Brome, Missisquoi.
Yeah, so the board of directors and management of the Brome Missisquoi Caregiver Support Group, which is the organization that owns and runs the Maison Gilcal de Brome Missisquoi, recently announced the temporary suspension of its respite housing services due to a non-compliance notice to the requirements of the Quebec Construction Code issued by the Town of Townsville's Urban Planning and Environment Department. So for those who don't know, the Maison Gilcal de Brome Missisquoi, it's located in Townsville, and it provides overnight respite services for its clientele in support of caregivers. According to Joanne Hood, who is the chairperson of the board of directors, the notice of non-compliance actually came after an emergency fire drill that was conducted at the Maison Gilcal that didn't really go smoothly. Joanne explained to CIDI in an interview that over the years, the needs of the clientele at the Maison Gilcal has dramatically changed, with more clients facing mobility issues. So as a result, those clients that are located or that are staying overnight on the third floor for respite care are not able to exit the building fast enough in order to reach the emergency fire exit and therefore safety. A fire ever did occur in the building. When the building was constructed, it was also zoned as a residential building, but it was determined by the Town of Townsville that it is now a health and social services establishment. Due to both of these reasons, but really more in particular, the issues around safety and the emergency fire exit, the board of directors decided to temporarily suspend the overnight services where its clientele stays overnight at the Maison Gilcal, just provide respite to caregivers until it receives recommendations from the Régie du bâtiment du Québec as to how to proceed and the upgrades that they should make on the building. Day services for respite continue, however, and they are hoping to get things up and running with their overnight respite as quickly as possible. But as of right now, they're still waiting on a response from the Régie du bâtiment du Québec as to how to move forward. Out of the safety for its clientele, it has decided to temporarily suspend the overnight respite care. It's just temporary. They are going to be bringing it back as quickly and as soon as possible.
There's information about the budget in Waterloo, Taylor?
Well, the town of Waterloo is launching its first participatory budget. So it's not the municipal budget. A participatory budget, for those who aren't aware as to what it is, it's actually a democratic process that allows citizens to get involved in decision-making at the municipal level by proposing projects that can benefit their local community. And these projects are financially supported through the municipal budget. So this is the first participatory budget that the town of Waterloo is launching, and they're focusing on environmental projects. Patrick Labrosse, who is an inspector for the Urban Planning and Environment Department with the Town of Waterloo, explained that the participatory budget came from the municipality's Environmental Committee and is in line with the Town of Waterloo's Sustainable Development Plan. The Town of Waterloo is actually in the midst of trying to conserve green spaces that the town owns itself. So it just kind of goes hand in hand with what the town is already doing. Patrick noted that citizens in Waterloo pride themselves on the municipality's rich environment. They have a lake there. There's a rich environment, a nice water body that people love to get out on in the summer. And so the municipality just wanted to give people the chance to decide what sort of environmental projects they wanted to see happen in their community. For example, a garden on a municipal plot or an environmental art project. As of right now, two projects have been submitted, but they're expecting to receive more. Once these projects are submitted and the municipality goes over them, the chosen projects are then put up for a public vote so citizens can vote on what project they want to see happen. The budget that is allocated for this project as of right now is $6,000, but as Patrick mentioned, it's only the first edition of the participatory budget. And if all goes well, if citizens are engaged and interested, they'll launch another participatory budget in the future with perhaps a larger budget to give citizens the opportunity to make decisions as to what they want to see happen in their community. So it'll be really interesting to see what project comes out of this in the near future.
Taylor McClure, heard on CIDI-FM, Daily News Bits, heard on CIDI991.com/website. What are your plans for the summer?
Staying around here, just taking it easy.
Taylor, once again, thank you so much for everything you do, and we'll see you again in August.
Yes. Take care, Daniel.
Friday night weather is showers tonight, low 12. Tomorrow, sunny, high 25. Saturday night, periods of rain, high 16. Sunday, showers, high 23. Long range for Monday, the 23rd, cloudy, 60% chance of showers, high 30. And very long range for June 24, mix of sun and cloud, 30% chance of showers, and a high of 32. Ed Humphrey comes in just after 5 o'clock with people, places, and things to do in the townships. 5:10, interview of the week, Vincent Boutet, who's going to run in the mayor's race in Sherbrooke this fall. 5:30 sports, John Edwards, 5:40, arts and culture with Sonia. The Friday Drive on CJMQ 88.9 FM and CIDI 99.1 FM.